Crime Happens contains coarse language, adult themes, and content of a violent and disturbing nature. It is not intended for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised. Hi everyone, welcome to Crime Happens, where we uncover the evil that surrounds us. I'm your host, Chris. Whether it's one of the 8 Ivy League schools on the East Coast or one of the most famous party schools on the West Coast, a school sports team, a military unit, a prison, a street gang, or the renowned Hell's Angels, you will find the despicable act of hazing. People are typically the most familiar with college hazing. When young adults make the decision to go to college, they're preparing for their future. For a lot of these kids, getting into a fraternity or a sorority is a family tradition, but they may also be looking for camaraderie and community of like-minded individuals found in these groups. These organizations are thought to be helpful with professional development, leadership skills, and social opportunities. This all sounds great, but depending on the fraternity or sorority you're applying to, the application or pledging process can be dangerous. Hazing can be found in many colleges, including the Ivy League 8, which includes Dartmouth, Harvard, Cornell, Brown, and Princeton. These schools are known for their academic excellence, rich histories, and vibrant cultures. They are often ranked among the top universities in the world. On the Dartmouth website, they introduce themselves as follows. Dartmouth is considered one of the world's greatest academic institutions and a member of the Ivy League. What they don't tell you, and what most don't know, is that Dartmouth College is home to some of the worst fraternity and sorority hazing rituals. Maybe it's their desire to be the very best. Chico State University in California has long been known as a party school, and you might even expect hazing to exist here. Well, you would be right because it does. At the University of Houston, you have access to world-class faculty, cutting-edge research opportunities, and a wealth of resources to help you succeed. You also have hazing. While colleges may have strict anti-hazing policies, and in some cases, it may even be illegal, there are few colleges completely free of hazing, and it still often goes unpunished or punished so lightly it's ridiculous. How does drinking a fifth of vodka in 30 minutes, throwing up, and then eating your own vomit while rolling around in feces help to determine who should be accepted is beyond me. What do these dangerous, humiliating, and cruel practices of hazing have to do with leadership or camaraderie? Absolutely nothing. So, we'll take a closer look at hazing and some of the various settings where it occurs, but the primary focus of this episode is on hazing in the college and university setting. Hazing is said to have originated with the founding of Plato's Academy. Plato was the great Greek philosopher born around 428 BC. During those times, hazing was called penalism, which means a system of mild depression and torment practiced upon first-year students. Plato didn't condone the practice, and he described it as practical jokes played by unruly young men that injured the hazed and citizens who got in the way. Since then, hazing has been an ongoing practice and seems to be alive and well today. Greek life on college campuses are home to some of the biggest offenders, a tradition that has been carried out since the days of Plato. Those who practice hazing claim that it's supposed to be a bonding activity designed to bring a team or group closer together. They say it gives new teammates an opportunity to earn their spot on the team and prove themselves worthy of the jersey. They say the activities are a rite of passage, which is performed voluntarily and is all in good fun. These claims couldn't be further from the truth. The reality is that hazing produces the opposite. When you read one horror story after another, it's clear that the innocent facade of hazing is masking the evil, sadistic insanity behind these rituals. According to the Stop Hazing Organization, modern-day hazing is any activity expected of someone joining or participating in a group that humiliates, degrades, abuses, or endangers them, regardless of a person's willingness to participate. Typically, we hear about the hazing that occurs on college campuses, in fraternities or sororities, but it's certainly not limited to these settings. Hazing also takes place in high schools, in sports, in gangs, and in other organizations and groups. Gangs like the Hells Angels, MS-13, and the Bloods use hazing. Hazing occurs within prisons carried out by inmates and corrections officers. All branches of the military have reports of hazing, and oftentimes the drill instructors are the primary offenders. Hazing comes in a wide range of behaviors, most of which make me sick to my stomach. Nearly all of the hazing rituals that I came across are completely insane. Apparently, the badass Hell's Angels require new members to collect a bucket of feces and urine, mix it all up, and pour it over their heads. After covering themselves in this cocktail of raw sewage, they are not allowed to change or clean themselves up for the remainder of the day. That's not badass, that's just effing crazy. The Aryan Brotherhood was part of the civil rights movement during the 1960s. This movement resulted in the desegregation of prisons, with inmates of all races serving their time in the same jail. Instead of state-sanctioned segregation, the inmates took matters into their own hands and segregated themselves into racially exclusive gangs. One of those gangs is the Aryan Brotherhood, which started in San Quentin Prison in 1964. Within the prison, the criminal activities of the gang includes male prostitution, drug smuggling, and extortion. New members of the Aryan Brotherhood must make their bones before they can share in the profit and power of the gang. This initiation requires murdering rival gang members and possibly even prison workers to get in. The Mara Salvatrucha 13, better known as MS-13, began in Los Angeles during the 1980s by immigrants who were fleeing El Salvador's long and brutal civil war. They were initially formed to protect immigrants from other gangs in the area. Over time, the gang grew into a more traditional criminal organization. The FBI believes that around 10,000 members currently exist in the U.S. and up to 40,000 operate in Guatemala and Honduras. Men joining MS-13 endure brutal initiations, like being jumped in, which means getting the shit beat out of you for 13 seconds, or getting wet, which means committing murder on behalf of the gang. They're known to recruit poor and at-risk teenagers. Just one example is when a young kid who was only 11 got jumped in by five of the strongest MS-13 gang members and was beat unconscious. Females who want to join MS-13 undergo the most horrifying initiation within the gang. Females must endure several full-fledged MS-13 male gang members forcing themselves on the recruit as part of a sexed-in ritual. The United Blood Nation, aka the Bloods, originated in Los Angeles in the early 1970s and require new recruits to the Bloods to dole out what they call a buck 50. This is the act of slashing a person's face with a box cutter so bad they will require at least 150 stitches. Some gangs in London will often require new members to choose either stabbing someone or eating dog feces. What a messed up choice. Are you asking yourself right now which one you would choose? Ha ha. The Junkie Funky Kids, or JFKs for short, are a drug gang located in Cape Town, South Africa. They require new members to run a gauntlet consisting of two parallel lines facing each other. New gang members are forced to run down the middle while current members beat them with belts, chains, and wooden planks. In prison, there are reports of new prisoners being forced to endure a shower shoe beating. This is where current prisoners beat the newbies with a rubber shower shoe by holding it with both hands and swinging as hard as they can. If the newbie refuses to participate, they'll receive a more violent beating of kicks and punches. There are also reports of new female corrections officers being assaulted by inmates. The assault comes in the form of groping by inmates, inmates exposing their genitals, and even rape. The behavior is encouraged by their male correction officer counterparts. If they try to report the behavior, the female correction officer will be subjected to severe consequences and retaliation. Although hazing is pretty widespread, it's the hazing at the college level which I find the most disturbing and difficult to comprehend. These are institutions of higher learning. So why do people haze? And why do people allow themselves to be hazed? It's complicated. College hazing involves some of the most bizarre rituals. Rituals that only serve to humiliate and dominate. These rituals have absolutely no redeeming qualities. Some pledges are blindfolded and told to run towards a landmark. In one reported case, three kids ran off the side of a cliff. In another case, a kid impaled himself on a sharp pole. In yet another case, pledges were forced to eat pieces of oil-soaked raw liver without chewing. One of these pledges choked to death. Pledges are forced to eat and drink until they vomit, and then forced to continue eating and drinking. It just goes on and on. I can't help but wonder, how in the hell do these groups or these individuals come up with all the various hazing rituals, and why? Why do people haze? Anthropologists are still trying to figure this out. According to Aldo Cimino, a lecturer in the anthropology department at UC Santa Barbara, hazing takes place in radically different cultures around the world, across social, demographic, and ecological environments. He also states that hazing and bullying have a lot in common, meaning individuals who possess some kind of power abuse those who don't. He also says that what makes hazing so strange is that it's directed at future allies. It's very rare for bullies to say, "I'm going to bully you for 3 months, but after that, we're going to be bros." But with hazing, that's exactly what happens. If anthropologists are still trying to figure it out, then clearly it's an even bigger mystery than I thought. According to an article by CNN, some of the students who do the hazing are students who survived their own hazing experience, and they're angry. They're looking for revenge. In some cases, they're going to give worse than they got. They actually look forward to getting to be the abuser next time around. Obviously, it's not that simple, but when I read the many, many horror stories about hazing, the words bully, mob mentality, psychopath, and sadist come to mind. But that's just me. Why do people allow themselves to be hazed? When it comes to men and women, there are some differences. According to Pietro Sazzo, a faculty research fellow at the Piazza Center, stated, "Our research suggests that women are more likely to engage in hazing for conformity and for identity, and men are more likely to participate in hazing to prove masculinity. But the overall theme is that they want group affiliation and a sense of belonging." In general, it's believed that being hazed can actually boost a person's self-esteem and a sense of accomplishment. They take pride in the fact that they survived the experience. In other cases, a person may feel like they have no choice. If they want to get on a specific team or in a specific group, they may feel like they have no choice but to go along. In many cases, the hazing activities start out as small, simple, harmless things, but they gradually get worse and worse. By the time the pledges or the person being hazed starts to feel uncomfortable or scared, they also feel like they're in too deep. They feel as though they've come this far and they don't want to back out now. They feel stuck. Peer pressure, as you might have guessed, is also a big factor. People can be bullied, harassed, or embarrassed into doing things they don't want to do. They are made to fear being retaliated against if they don't go along. This pressure can be so strong that some people seem to lose the ability to push back. Unfortunately, what these people don't think about is the fact that they may end up in a hospital, or worse, the morgue. In one study conducted by Elon University, they talk about what they call cognitive dissonance, stating that when an individual holds two opposing beliefs in tension, he or she experiences tension which may be resolved by changing one of the views. When people view themselves as smart, reasonable people who participated in degrading experiences, they may look back and minimize the extent that they experienced degradation. Otherwise, they would be left saying to themselves, "I'm a smart person, and I joined a group that degraded me," which would create tension. Saying to oneself, "It wasn't that bad," creates less tension. As a result, individuals in a group that is hazed may eventually feel positively about the group that subjected them to the experience. From the outside looking in, that is so hard to believe, especially when you hear the following horror stories. College life usually conjures up images of young people on campus sitting on the grass with their friends, backpacks spread out around them. Maybe close to campus you see a frat house labeled with Greek letters and a dilapidated couch on the front porch. And of course, football and other sports. There's nothing in the college brochure to tell you about hazing. Hazing within the university setting are some of the worst stories you can imagine. I think part of what makes them so horrific is that these people are not in street gangs. They're not in prisons. These are activities that take place in association with institutions of higher learning. Those involved are young people who have advantages that so many others don't. They have bright futures ahead of them. These young people are our future. They will go on to be leaders, teachers, doctors, etc. To me, the people involved in these incidents represent both innocence and evil. Hazing rituals are demeaning, degrading, dangerous, and sometimes deadly. In many cases, when the victims of hazing don't die, they're lucky to be alive. Or worse, wish they were dead. The New York Post reported that Pi Kappa Alpha International Fraternity, informally known as PIKE, has been involved in a number of incidents across the country, including Mississippi, Ohio, Texas, and Louisiana, just to name a few. In November of 2016, a particularly brutal event at the University of Houston resulted in a Texas grand jury indictment against Pi Kappa Alpha. It was alleged that during a 3-day hazing ritual, pledges were deprived of sleep, food, and water. After being broken down physically and mentally, Jared Munoz, one of the pledges, was also forced to roll around in a vile mixture of vomit, spit, and feces, and drink very hot beer. Jared was then told to run along a rural, darkened stretch while holding a green glow stick before he was tackled by frat members who wore dark clothing. So, they can see him, but he can't see them. According to prosecutors in Harris County, this is a hazing ritual known as the green light game. As a result of being repeatedly tackled and body slammed during this so-called game, Jared wound up in the ICU for 5 days with a lacerated spleen where he very nearly died. The fraternity was indicted for the incident and was suspended for 5 years. Big deal. Believe it or not, not a single individual member was charged. Jared took it upon himself to sue the fraternity and 29 of its members for $1 million in relief and damages. He wanted to force accountability at the individual level. This should happen anyway, in my opinion. Jared shouldn't have had to do this on his own. In another hazing incident involving Pike, aka Pi Kappa Alpha, this time at the Bowling Green State University in Ohio, Stone Fultz, 20, died of alcohol poisoning. According to Wikipedia, on March 4, 2021, Fultz and the other new members of the fraternity arrived at 8:30 p.m. to the off-campus house, known to members as the Bando. They were dressed in formal attire and told to use their ties as blindfolds before being led inside single file. While being led to the basement, they were pushed and yelled at while being disoriented by loud music. Once in the basement, their blindfolds were removed and they were introduced to their respective big, an older member who would serve as a mentor in the fraternity. What a joke. As part of the ritual, new members were heavily pressured to drink a fifth of hard liquor. Each little was gifted a bottle of what they called the family drink, which in the case of Stone Fultz was whiskey. The pledges began drinking their bottles, and some eyewitness reports state that Fultz finished his bottle in only 18 minutes. Fraternity members state that the new members were not told that finishing the bottle was required to continue the pledge process, but it was most likely implied and they were heavily pressured. Witnesses also reported seeing Fultz throw up and stated that he had trouble walking. His frat members took him back to his apartment and just left him there. Where was his so-called mentor or big when they carried Fultz back to his apartment? When his roommate came home later and found him there unconscious, he called Fultz's girlfriend. As soon as she arrived, Fultz stopped breathing. They called 911 and he was airlifted to the hospital, but it was too late. He could not be revived. His blood alcohol content was 0.394%. In most states, 0.08 or higher is the legal limit for a DUI, or driving under the influence. I guess Stone just wasn't Pike material. He couldn't handle his liquor. From today.com, 5 members of the fraternity were sentenced to jail or probation for their role in the death of Stone Foltz. Jared Pritzel, 19, Dalen Dunson, 22, and Ben Boyers, 21, all pleaded guilty to reckless homicide and hazing charges. Pritzel was sentenced to 28 days in jail and 2 years probation. Dunson was sentenced to 21 days in jail and 3 years probation. Dunson and Boyers also pleaded guilty to obstructing justice, and Dunson admitted to tampering with evidence. Boyers and another former member, Aaron Lehane, 21, were sentenced to 28 days of house arrest and 2 years probation. Additionally, another former member, Niall Sweeney, 21, received a 14-day jail sentence and 2 years probation. 2 other Pike members, Jacob Crinn and Troy Henriksen, were convicted of misdemeanor charges, including hazing and violating underage drinking laws, but were acquitted of the more serious charges of involuntary manslaughter and reckless homicide. The fraternity was permanently expelled from the university, but the individuals involved in the Stone Foltz hazing incident received extremely light sentences. After the death of Stone Foltz, a bill was finally passed to make hazing a felony in Ohio. In an article from the Gordy Center, we learned that Adam Oakes attended the Virginia Commonwealth University, where he was hazed to death. The purpose of the Gordy Center is to end hazing and substance misuse among college and high school students nationwide. During an event at Delta Chi over the course of an evening on February 27, 2021, that began at 8 p.m., Adam Oakes died from alcohol poisoning after he was told to chug 40 ounces of Jack Daniel's whiskey. His blood alcohol level was later determined to be 0.419, beyond the level of surgical anesthesia, and a point where breathing turns shallow and a coma can kick in. Adam threw up and collapsed on the floor. The other frat brothers who saw him that night just left him lying there. He was pronounced dead at the scene the next day. All 11 witnesses who saw Adam lying there and did nothing that night to help him were charged with the Class 1 misdemeanor offense for criminal hazing in Adam's death, as required by Virginia law. No one was charged with homicide. The witnesses' misdemeanor charges, which could have meant 12 months in jail and a $2,500 fine for each person, instead resulted in orders to do community service. The students were required to make presentations at other schools about the evils of hazing, talk about what happened to Adam, and work directly with the Oakes family to explain to people that what they did was wrong. Can you just imagine how Adam's family must feel working with these guys? In an article from abc.net Australia, the University of Newcastle is just north of Sydney, Australia. In 2018, a video was making the rounds where someone had filmed younger University of Newcastle college students drinking booze from an older student's genitals and eating their own vomit as part of the crazy initiation rituals. The videos are absolutely disgusting and enough to gag a maggot, as my dad used to say. In the video uncovered by Nina Funnel, older male students are shown pulling out the skin of their scrotum to make a small cup where beer is poured, then a student kneeling in front of them drinks out of it. This act is also known as bird bathing. Obviously, this act is so common that they have given it a name. In another incident, Ed Farmer, a new student, died from alcohol poisoning in an organized pub crawl. It started with students being encouraged to eat chicken's feet and raw potatoes. That's just disgusting. This horrible ordeal was actually caught on CCTV. Next, they went to the house of the person who organized this lovely welcome event. Here, the students bobbed for apples in containers of piss and alcohol. Then they were given cocktails of wine and milk to drink. I'm ready to vomit just reading about this. After cocktails, the younger students had their heads shaved by senior students. Then students were encouraged to drink vodka from a pig's head, although Ed Farmer was too drunk to participate in this ritual. Sadly, Ed drank himself into unconsciousness just trying to fit in. The other students claim they thought he was snoring and just left him lying in a corridor of the house. In fact, his lungs were shutting down because they were blocked with liquid. Eventually, he stopped breathing altogether, but instead of calling an ambulance, the older students fumbled and bumbled, getting him into a car, where he then went into cardiac arrest while on their way to the Royal Victoria Infirmary and died. If he had been brought in earlier, he might have had a chance at survival. The worst punishment received by the individuals involved in Ed Farmer's death was expulsion from the university. In a CBS News article by Anderson Cooper, we learn about Sam Martinez. On November 12, 2019, Sam Martinez was hazed to death during a fraternity event called The Big Little at Washington State University. This is an event where upperclassmen who are big brothers reveal themselves to their little brothers. Big brothers are supposed to be mentors to their little brothers. In this case, the guys shared what they called a family drink. We've heard this before. Martinez's big brother provided him with a half-gallon jug of spiced rum to share with another pledge. Martinez died later that night from acute alcohol poisoning. His big brother, Wesley Oswald, claimed he never forced Martinez to drink and only pleaded guilty to providing alcohol to a minor. He was sentenced to 19 days in jail and 1 year of probation. Others in the group stated that they were not forced to drink, and it was reiterated that if they didn't want to drink, they didn't have to. But the coercion was there, the pressure was intense, and they were encouraged by their big brothers to consume the whole bottle by saying things like, "Do it fast and be a better pledge than these wimps here who can't do what you can do." If they don't go along, they are ridiculed and bullied. They know they will most likely be asked to leave the group if they don't comply, or at least believe it regardless of the truth. So technically, they are not forced, but their desire to be accepted by the group is what drives them to go along and submit to the event's activities. On October 19, 2021, at the University of Missouri, the Phi Gamma Delta hazing of 18-year-old Daniel Santulli was caught on camera. The footage shows Daniel guzzling an entire bottle of vodka. He and his fellow pledges are led blindfolded and shirtless down a staircase in their frat house. After about 2 hours, he passes out and falls backwards. The other fraternity members in the house carried him to a couch where he lay unresponsive before eventually slipping onto the floor. Another person is actually sitting close by, witnessing all of this. Despite seeing that Daniel was in bad shape and his lips had turned blue, nobody called 911. Santulli's mother commented, "It's like, I don't know. I mean, a six-year-old calls 911. After several minutes, some fraternity members try to pick him up and carry him towards the door, but drop him. After their Laurel and Hardy attempt to move him, they did manage to get him to the hospital, but it was too late. Daniel had already suffered irreversible damage. He has been left blind and unable to walk or talk. Sadly, Daniel will require around-the-clock care for the rest of his life. The Phi Gamma Delta fraternity was suspended in Missouri. 11 students, including Alec Wetzler, who was the organizer, were charged with misdemeanor charges. Wetzler, who was charged with the misdemeanor of supplying liquor to a minor, was convicted and given a suspended sentence of 180 days in jail. Why is the sentence passed down and then immediately suspended? It's my understanding that when this happens, the courts are trying to put the emphasis on rehabilitation. It is supposed to give an incentive for good behavior as long as the individual doesn't violate their parole. For me, personally, it just doesn't feel like justice. It doesn't sound proportional. How will they learn there are consequences for their actions? As detailed in the New York Post, in 2013, at Milton High School in Vermont, Jordan Prevey, a 16-year-old junior, just made the football team. It was a dream come true for Jordan, until he got hazed. During a hazing ritual to welcome him to the team, Jordan was sodomized by his new teammates. Witnesses to the assault stated that he was sodomized through his clothes with a broomstick by at least two older teammates. During the attack, he screamed out in pain and repeatedly yelled, "No, and get off me." A year after the attack, Jordan killed himself. He never told his parents about the hazing, but it was alleged that the school knew and did nothing, and they chose not to tell his parents. His parents sued the school, claiming it failed to protect Jordan. They stated that the sexual assault in front of his teammates contributed to his decision to take his life. This would be traumatic at any age, for any reason. But Jordan was only 16. These were his beloved teammates. I can only imagine his horror, fear, humiliation, and pain. The school denied any culpability, saying the broom never penetrated Jordan's clothing. The district argued that having an object pressed against his clothing in his buttocks is unlikely to have had any impact on Jordan's decision to commit suicide. This is so frustrating. This is just bullshit. Brandon Beliveau, the captain of the football team, was one individual who carried out the assault and was eventually convicted of two charges: simple assault, which is a misdemeanor, and unlawful restraint, which is a felony. He received a sentence of 12 days in prison and 4 years of probation. The 12 days will be conveniently served over 4 consecutive weekends. Not much of a punishment or deterrent. According to ABC 11 and the Daily Princetonian, Princeton University, which is one of the elite Ivy League 8, states under its official policy that it does not recognize fraternities or sororities, and they do not have fraternity or sorority houses on campus. Beginning in the fall of 2012, Princeton prohibits freshmen from engaging or affiliating with fraternities or sororities. Students who try to recruit freshmen into Greek organizations risk being suspended. Princeton does not believe that Greek organizations contribute anything positive to campus or social life and put too much emphasis on alcohol. Despite these policies and beliefs, it is still not immune to hazing. In a 2023 article by Anna Izyamova, published in the Daily Princetonian, she reports the following. In December of 2022, 27 students were involved in a fraternity hazing incident. Of the 27 students, 24 received suspensions and disciplinary probation. Three of the students who organized the event were found responsible for failure to get help for a student who was having an adverse nicotine reaction. No details were provided as to what this meant. And four, physical injury to some new members. The hazing incident included having new members, some being minors, encouraged to consume foods, liquids, and alcohol in a manner that risked physical and emotional harm. They were made to participate in physically and emotionally demeaning and or dangerous conduct that placed the new members at a substantial risk of physical injury and other harms, which resulted in physical injury to some new members. Although the article doesn't spell it out, I imagine the event was like so many others we've covered. Students would have been drinking mass quantities of alcohol in very short periods, and there would have been other crazy, possibly dangerous antics as well. As punishment, these students had their degrees temporarily withheld or were placed on a 2-year suspension. The university also determined that 15 of the 27 students were part of an effort to withhold information from investigators, providing incomplete or inaccurate statements. Two additional students refused to cooperate with the investigation. In addition to suspension, 7 students were censured above their penalty for their dishonesty or failure to get help or to underscore the seriousness of their conduct. A student who is familiar with the fraternity involved in the incident, but who wasn't a member, alleged that the fraternity practices included burning each other with cigarettes, cutting each other, and pouring hot sauce on the wounds. This is from Princeton, the best of the best of the best. Student suspension, fraternity house suspension, and withholding degrees temporarily seems to be the primary means of punishment. At the end of the day, all their rules, policies, beliefs, and ridiculously light punishments do diddly squat to curb hazing. From the Chico State student newspaper, The Orion, February 2024 marks almost 20 years since the death of Matthew Carrington, which is just one case of hazing at Chico State that resulted in the death of a fraternity member and a lawsuit. Matthew Carrington died at the age of 21 on February 2, 2005 in the basement of Chi Tau. The basement was cold, dark, and dirty. Written on the walls was the quote, "In the basement, no one can hear you scream." That is just terrifying. Matthew was there with his friend Mike Quintana. They were ordered downstairs and told to do calisthenics in raw sewage that had leaked on the floor. While doing the calisthenics, they were also ordered to drink water from a big 5-gallon jug, which was filled over and over. They had fans pointed at them blowing ice-cold air on their wet bodies. During this ordeal, they urinated and vomited on themselves. Carrington finally collapsed and went into a seizure. It took too long for their fraternity members to call for help. When they finally did, it was too late. He was transported to Enloe Hospital in Chico, where he died from water intoxication. The excess amount of water in his system caused his brain and his lungs to swell. After the incident, several chapter members involved pleaded guilty for their role in Carrington's death. The university banned all Chico State Greek Life chapters from recruiting new pledges for the fall semester. Just one measly semester. As it implemented new rules prohibiting alcohol and hazing from fraternities and sororities. As if this will make any difference. Carrington's death led to the establishment of Matt's Law, a California legislation that allows for felony prosecution in hazing cases after the incident has occurred. Carrington's mother, Debbie Smith, lobbied for the law to be passed in 2006 and was inspired to advocate for change on college campuses. That same year, Sigma Chi fraternity was temporarily suspended after pledge Richard Amador was admitted to the hospital and nearly died from alcohol poisoning. Chico State has been plagued with hazing horror stories for decades. In 1984, Jeffrey Long was killed when he was hit by a car while participating in a ritual called rides. The pledges are taken to a remote location, blindfolded, turned loose, and told to find their way home. I'm sure there was drinking involved. Despite these incidents, cases show that Chico State still has a problem with hazing. One reason is the fact that student-involved punishment for these activities is so minor. Others point to the fact that even if fraternities are found guilty of hazing or violating fraternity and sorority affairs policies and procedures, and they are suspended, the organizations have the opportunity to reapply for university recognition again after their suspension. Timothy Tim Piazza was 19 years old when he attended a University of Pennsylvania Beta Theta Pi fraternity event in February of 2017 that included hazing and ultimately resulted in his death. Like so many pledges before him in hazings across the country, he was forced to drink a large amount of alcohol in a very short period of time. Under extreme pressure, he drank 18 drinks in 82 minutes. He became so drunk that he fell headfirst down a flight of stairs in the house. The fraternity brothers carried him back upstairs and put him on a couch. At one point, Tim staggered around drunk and managed to wander back downstairs. He tried to get up several times throughout the night, but each time he would fall down, and each time he fell, he injured himself further. His blood alcohol level was later determined to be 0.36. Tim lay there vomiting and suffering from spasms while being ignored. While he was lying injured, drunk, and unconscious, his beloved future frat brothers stumbled around themselves, sometimes falling on top of him. They sat on his legs while they slapped him in the face in a poor attempt to revive him, and one member hit him hard in the abdomen with his open right hand. This continued until he eventually stopped moving. In the end, Tim suffered from a fractured skull and a lacerated spleen. It was 12 hours from the time of his initial fall headfirst down the stairs to the time someone finally called 911. Unfortunately, it was too late for Tim, and he died from his injuries. Incredibly, the surveillance video from inside the house shows a lot of what happened that night. Although one fraternity member did try to convince the group to get help, he was shut down by his overbearing fellow frat brothers, so he didn't force the issue. According to NBCNews.com, author Andrew Lose, who chronicled hazing at Dartmouth University, in his 2014 memoir, Confessions of an Ivy League Frat Boy, blamed fraternities such as Beta Theta Pi for being ruled by incredibly strong groupthink. He told NBC in an interview that fraternities, along with groupthink, are about submissions of power. It's about dominance. It's about control. He states that secrecy breeds peer pressure and frowns on speaking out of turn. Two students, Brendan Young, 28, and Daniel Casey, 27, who were the president and vice president of Beta Theta Pi, each pleaded guilty to 14 counts of hazing and a single count of reckless endangerment in relation to Tim Piazza's death. Young and Casey were each sentenced 2 to 4 months in prison with work release eligibility, followed by 3 years probation plus community service. In his memory, Tim's family runs a foundation called the Piazza Center. The Piazza Center provides research on Greek life and hazing. Even though we don't hear about it as often as we do men, experts say women are hazed as often as men, but in less violent ways. Well, they may be less violent, but people still die. In one example, Cal State LA sorority pledges were taken to a beach where they were forced to do calisthenics for hours until they were exhausted. Then they were ordered to walk backward into the water. One girl, who couldn't swim, got knocked down by a wave and dragged out to sea. Another girl tried to save her, but the current was too strong and now she was too weak, and she got dragged under as well. Both girls drowned. One report from Penn State describes pledges being forced to stand facing a wall with their noses touching. While they're standing against the wall, they were yelled at and insulted. If they moved, they would have their heads smashed into the wall. One of these women was forced to clean the dirty kitchen floor of the house they were in. She cleaned and mopped the floor, describing the bucket of mop water as filthy and black by the time she finished. The sorority sisters ordered her to drink the filthy water, but in this case, the pledge refused and left the house. Given everything we have just learned, she was pretty courageous. She was called all kinds of names and harassed for walking out. At an incident at Dartmouth, a pledge describes a night of extreme alcohol consumption. She and other pledges were pushed into a moving vehicle, given gallon jugs of spiked punch and ordered to drink. Then they were handed vodka shots and ordered to drink those. Once they reached their destination, the pledges were told to get out of the car. One of the girls says that to this day, she cannot remember what happened after that because she blacked out. The next thing she remembers is waking up in the ICU with 3 other pledges from the same night. She was covered in cuts and bruises, and her 2 front teeth were broken. The doctors told her she was 1 drink away from dying. At the University of Tennessee, pledges had syrup poured all over them, vinegar sprayed in their faces, and then punched. One pledge was punched in the stomach so hard that it caused vaginal bleeding. Other pledges were paddled and beat so hard that one girl suffered a concussion. Just one incident at UC Berkeley in 2011 describes how pledges were beaten over the head with a blunt object. Others had their clothes ripped off and their heads slammed into a wall. One last disgusting episode to share is from the University of Albany. Pledges were forced to eat anything that was shoved into their mouths while they were blindfolded. One girl had an allergic reaction while eating mud and having a mixture of rotten milk, eggs, mold-covered food, and a liquid which smelled like urine poured over her head and onto her face. The stories of hazing within sororities, just like fraternities, seems endless. In all of these incidents, I have a hard time comprehending such cruel and dangerous behavior. Okay, I know I said I was done sharing. Just one more. As I was wrapping up this episode, another incident hit the news. This time in Louisiana at the Southern University. 20-year-old Caleb Wilson died during a hazing ritual for Omega Psi Phi. In this particular case, 8 students were taken to a warehouse in Baton Rouge. They were told to change into sweatsuits. The organizers then split the pledges into smaller groups and put on boxing gloves. The students were wearing the gloves and then began to punch the pledges. Caleb Wilson was punched at least 4 times in the chest when he collapsed on the floor, urinated on himself, and looked to be suffering from a seizure. They did not call 911, but dropped him off at the hospital themselves. Before transporting him to the hospital, they stopped and took the time to change his clothes. It's unknown at the time of this writing how long between the time the incident occurred and the trip to the hospital. So far, 2 of the men arrested are charged with criminal hazing, which is a felony in Louisiana. This story is unfolding, and 3 students have been arrested so far. Police state it is unclear if there will be more arrests. Despite it being a felony based on previous cases in other states, I seriously doubt there will be any consequences of significance. Hopefully I'm wrong. Hazing has been around since the days of Plato, and it continues to thrive today. These cruel and dangerous activities have almost no consequences, at least none of any significance. Law enforcement has no ability to affect what goes on in gangs, but it seems to me that our schools, prisons, and military could and should do better. In my personal opinion, hazing should be treated as a very serious and often violent crime. These activities have absolutely nothing to do with camaraderie, professional development, leadership skills, or social opportunities. I do not see hazing as just boys being boys. This is so much more than just supplying alcohol to minors. These are not harmless, innocent initiation or team-building activities. I believe that hazing is a serious crime, and those who haze are bullies at best and criminals at worst. They should be treated accordingly. That's probably too black and white for anthropologists or psychologists or courts, but whatever is going on, whatever the reasons are, it needs to stop. Until universities, prisons, our military, and other organizations start taking hazing seriously and operating with transparency, I don't see it going away. What do you think? Thanks again for tuning in to Crime Happens. All episodes are researched, written, recorded, and audio mixed by me. Crime Happens is available on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Please follow or subscribe wherever you listen. Check out my website at crimehappens.com and be sure to follow me on Instagram at crime_happens. I'll be back very soon with an all-new episode. Until then, I wish you well.